Financial Overhaul gets the green light.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. We're going to get a take on the global perspective in just a moment. The G20 is getting kicked off just north of the border. More on that coming up. But first, lawmakers in the House and Senate worked into the wee hours of this morning to agree on a financial reform compromise bill. Sticky issues such as derivatives and limits on what kinds of deals banks can engage in have been worked out. Early next week, each chamber will vote, and if all goes as planned, a bill will land on President Obama's desk within 1 week. We're going to find out how it all went down. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman is with us live this morning to talk about it. Good morning, Mitchell.
Good morning, Steve.
Remind us again why this is being debated in the first place.
Well, keep in mind, this is the biggest overhaul of financial regulation since the Depression. And of course, it was sparked by our recent financial catastrophe that almost got us into another depression. And it tries to deal with some of the key players that are at the center of the crisis.
Key players. So give me a list of some of the big things.
Well, hedge funds and private equity firms, they're going to have to register with regulators and open their books. Banks get treated in a number of ways. They're going to have to put aside more capital, and they'll be restricted in dealing on their own behalf. It's what's called proprietary trading. Finally, these complex transactions, we've all heard about derivatives. There was talk of a strict crackdown. That didn't happen. But still, Wall Street investment firms will face some new restrictions, and derivatives are going to be tracked on exchanges and clearinghouses.
And Mitchell, what about some of the consumer protections we've been hearing about that were so fiercely debated in the run-up to this legislation?
Well, there will be a new consumer watchdog bureau. It's going to be within the Federal Reserve with pretty broad powers. It'll have power over mortgages and credit cards. But it is not a completely independent agency. That's what consumer advocates initially were pushing for. Finally, kind of looking at the big picture, there are measures in here to try and anticipate problems and then head off the kinds of bailouts we've seen of investment banks and insurance companies that are deemed too big to fail. So there will be a new board of regulators that's job is to look at the entire financial system looking for signs of trouble before things get really bad.
Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman with us live on the historic financial reform legislation vote. Mitchell, thanks.
You're welcome.
Now the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics around the world and how it affects us here in the United States. Leaders from the world's 20 most powerful nations are gathered in Toronto for the weekend. And there seems to be a growing divide between Europe and the United States over whether it's still economic crisis mode or time for budget tightening. Another topic of conversation, how China avoids criticism by letting its currency appreciate in value. Marketplace's John Dimsdale reports the pressure to revalue is coming from more than just the Americans.
India and Brazil are looking for a little competitive advantage, too. David DeRosa is a currency expert at DeRosa Research.
They simply think that they'll get a bigger export market if China revalues upwards.
That means if Chinese-made clothes and electronics that dominate American store shelves become more expensive. Nicholas Lardy at the Peterson Institute for International Economics says a change in China's currency would help developing countries even more than the U.S.
Those countries are at a much lower level of economic development, and they tend to produce a range of goods that is much more similar to what the Chinese produce.
Still, he says Indian and Brazilian imports won't have China's currency advantage, and that would make them more expensive here. And that would help bring down the trade deficit. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Yeah, leaders will be talking about trade deficits and the Chinese currency this weekend. But will anything really get done? And why are so many countries included in this economic rodeo? Marketplace's Stephen Beard is with us live from London to explain what it's all about. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Steve.
What actually happens in these meetings? Are people in dark corners making all these deals?
Well, to some extent, yes, but there are full sessions with all the leaders sitting around and discussing a prearranged agenda. There are one-on-one meetings and, of course, news conferences to feed the media machine at the end of it all, a declaration and a group photo of the leaders.
The group photo, just this big photo op. Is that what it is, or does anything else really happen?
Well, it's probably better that these leaders meet than that they don't. In terms of tangible results, it's difficult to pinpoint them. One that springs to mind back in the 1980s, the Plaza Accord, when governments agreed to drive down the dollar to help the U.S. pull out of recession. You could argue that last year's G20 meeting in London brought a measure of coordination which stopped the global economy falling off a cliff. At this meeting, as we've heard, there's this rift between the US and the Europeans over stimulus spending versus deficit cutting. Summit watcher Sean Rickard of the Cranfield School of Management is not optimistic, however, that the leaders will bridge that rift in Canada.
Somehow or other, I think the incentive to work together, which existed in London a year ago when really the system was threatened with breakdown, has lifted, and I do not really expect any serious progress.
Critics of the G20 say the problem is it's too big and unwieldy, too many different points of view. Some analysts here suggest it would be better, and more effective, in fact, for the US to get together in a room with two others, China and Germany perhaps, a G3, but no one's really expecting that idea to take off.
We'll see if that makes it into the suggestion box. Marketplace's Stephen Beard reporting from London. Stephen, thanks.
Okay, Steve.
Quickly, let's check numbers. European stocks are off at the moment, average of 0.5%. Asian markets lower today. Japan's Nikkei lost 2%. Wall Street yesterday, the market shed between 1% and 2%. The Dow lost 145 points to close at 10,152.
Marketplace is supported by Vanguard, a client-owned company where the clients own the funds and the funds own the company. Learn more at Vanguard.com.
And finally, all the business news in a Marketplace Minute. Here's Bill Radke.
It looks like Congress has taken the edge off the rule on how banks can hedge. The issue is driving a major wedge, and supporters backed off on their earlier pledge. The U.S. tells the G20 this ain't the time to pinch a penny. Spend your money. Spend plenty. Europe says, you got any? Obama announced a drilling ban. You can't go in deep water, man. A Gulf Coast judge says, yes, you can. Turns out it's in his investment plan. YouTube aired stuff that was copyrighted. Viacom felt slighted and tried to fight it, but it wasn't requited. The judge that tried it wasn't quite as excited. Google's delighted. Fannie Mae says you're a louse if you and your spouse walk away from your house. And iPhone 4 has hit the store, so you don't have to wait anymore. Thank God, I'm so tired of the iPhone 3. I'll see you at marketplace.org.
Marketplace's Bill Radke. This is the Marketplace Morning Report in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiotakis.
American Public Media.